Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
The 2 o'clock hour of this show is called the happy hour. Anna joins us every day in the 2 o'clock hour. Now joining us, I can't think of a more joyful, happy guy. UCLA in the Final Four, the Pac-12 doing well. Bill Walton making his return to the show. How are you, sir?
John, fantastic. I hear it's a beautiful day in Oregon today, even though the Beavers and the Ducks lost this past week. But wow. And now to be on the show, the happy hour with your wife, Anna. Now, my wife, Lori, she liked sports a whole lot more before she met me. And I don't know how that relationship has worked out with you guys. But, man, it is just so special for me to be back on your show. So special to be in the state of Oregon. Man, how cool. I'm just the luckiest guy on earth.
How are you rectifying? Because I want to say you kind of called this. I think you predicted the Pac-12 would do very well in this tournament, and Pac-12 is having a historic tournament.
I was listening to the Doors this morning, and Jim, he said it straight. The West is the best, and it's just fantastic to see that all the teams have done so well, and with both the men's and the women's Final Four being dominated by the Conference of Champions, it's just something that I have come to live and to know. And the way that the teams have played this year, Oregon State, you know, by the end, they were the best team in the Conference of Champions, and they should have beaten Houston, but yeah, that was not to be. And it was tough because the Beavers had played so very, very well. And then the Ducks, they couldn't get past USC. And it was just, USC was such a good team this year, standard of excellence, search for perfection. And then they ran into this volcano that is the Gonzaga Bulldogs. And now it's UCLA's turn. And so all we want is a chance. And I'm sorry to be late on the show today, John.
You're all right.
But I was on a show with Kareem at a studio down the street here, and the show was supposed to last for 12 minutes, and it lasted 51 minutes. And it just kept going and going and going. And by the time I looked at the time, oh, my gosh, I was running late. But
you're
now
all right.
I'm here.
I'm just glad you're here. And that brings me to a question, because I was thinking about this, because Gonzaga seemed, you know, this one seed, they look unbeatable. 1977, you ran into a one seed. You ran into the Lakers in the Western Conference Finals, and you beat them 4-0, and that was Kareem in his prime. How did you beat them 4-0?
Well, we had Maurice Lucas, and we had Jack Ramsey, and nobody else did. And we would have been the number one seed, except I had missed 17 games that year due to injury, which in historical footnote, that would have been one of the most productive seasons of my career, missing 17 games. But we had such a special team. We also, besides having Maurice and besides having Jack, we had the Blazer Maniacs. And the Blazer Maniacs, they would never let us stop. I mean, it was just this relentless push and what you love in life and what you search for. And it was just a dream team and a dream time for me. And I wish it could have lasted forever. But we were, we had Johnny Davis and Lionel Hollins and Bob Gross and Dave Twardzik and Larry Steele and Corky Calhoun and Lloyd Neal and all these remarkable players. Herm Gilliam won a game for us. And Lionel, who I still talk to all the time, it just was spectacular. And we were on fire, and really, we were not losing to anybody. Yeah. And we just kept right on going, and just we should still be winning, but these legs just don't work, man. It's tough. And 39 orthopedic operations, 2 fused ankles, 2 replaced knees, a replaced spine, and my hands and wrists and don't work, and my face is what it is. So, man, I'm just glad that Laurie's still here.
Bill Walton is with us. Bill, let me ask you about John Wooden, because I think, you know, a lot of people are talking about UCLA and a return to greatness. What was Wooden's impact on you?
Well, everything. You know, he wanted to be your dad when we wanted, at 17, 18, 19 years old, we wanted to be on our own. He took his job very seriously, and everything he said during those 4 years later on came true. Now, I had a 43-year relationship with John Wooden, 3 years in high school, 1967 through 70, 4 years in college playing for him, 70 through 74, and then by far the most interesting years were the 36 years afterwards, from 1974 until he died in 2010. And he was not your friend. You know, I see so many similarities with Mark Few to John Wooden. You know, the quiet, calm, poised, but fierce, tough, competitive, driven, but fair. Fair and fun in terms of treating the team and the people around it and everything, but the level of seriousness that the coach has to have, that the leader. You know, you look at what David Stern did and his life in terms of building the NBA into what it is. David Stern, the leader, he's just never happy, you know, because he's always on to what's next. And that is, you know, Mark Few. Now, Mark has, you know, he has a wonderful family. He has his outlets with the fishing and the outdoors and the bike riding and the music and all the different things. But, you know, this guy, John Wooden, who was so powerful in the interview that Kareem and I just did, we were talking about Kareem's 2 books about himself. That one's called Becoming Kareem, his very recent book. And then that came just 6 months on the heels of Coach Wooden and me, which was his relationship with John Wooden. And my relationship was different because I was always incredibly questioning about John Wooden, because I wanted no part of, you know, shaving or cutting my hair or wearing the clothes that he wanted me to wear. And I wanted no part of Nixon or Vietnam or the fact that he had all these rules that he insisted that we abide by, things like no cheerleaders in your hotel room on the road trips. And that was just unacceptable to me. And so I would always get into it with the coach about everything. And then when I left, I had the greatest childhood ever. And I didn't really understand the challenges of other young men chasing their dreams and trying to make it. I knew I was going to play in the NBA, but because I started playing against NBA players when I was 14 years old. And, you know, my dream was to go to UCLA and play for in college. I loved the way that they played, the same way that I love the way Gonzaga plays right now. I love the speed game, John. And, you know, that's one of the things that Jack Ramsey brought to Oregon, to Blazers, to basketball in general, was, you know, he was very adamant that he wanted the fastest guys in the league on his team. And when you have a backcourt of Lionel Hollins, Johnny Davis, and Dave Torzic, man, you're talking about the fastest backcourt ever. And people would not understand when I say that about Dave Torzic, but Dave's concept of change of pace, change of direction. Now, when I look at what happened to Oregon State in their loss to Houston and their inability, you know, it's really the same story of the entire tournament. Missed free throws, the inability to get rebounds, the lack of creative offense, and all of offense, the basic the basic element of any offense is the back cut and to go backdoor and to make your man, you know, guard you properly so that you can get what you want, where you want, when you want it. And so here it was, you know, with Dave Twardzik and Johnny Davis and Lionel Hull. Now, Johnny and Lionel were just the fastest humans on earth. I mean, they're right up there with Usain Bolt. But Dave, the change of pace, change of direction, he was a Fred Biletnikoff player in that he would just be going at one speed and all of a sudden, bam, that quick explosion. And it doesn't matter if you're faster or slower than the guy you're playing against. What matters is that you are going at a different speed. You don't want to be at the same speed. And so our team, the Blazer team, when Oregon State and when the Ducks and when Gonzaga's playing on top of their game, when USC, with the way USC beat Oregon and beat Kansas, I mean, that was just beautiful basketball. And now the challenge is going to be for if UCLA can do that, because UCLA has been a serious underdog. Now, the Daily Wager starts on ESPN at the top of the hour here at 3 o'clock, and they'll be having all kinds of new information for us. But the Bruins have been serious underdogs in every single game, and yet they have come out and done the impossible. You know, we needed a miracle, and we got a miracle. And it's really the greatest story ever told. And so as you learn to be the champion, and I think that's one of the great things that Mark Few has been able to do, is to get these guys to play the team game with a phenomenal level of physical fitness. That was Jack Ramsey. That was John Wooden. The speed game, the running. And please read Paul Westhead's recent book. It's either called The Fast Game or The Speed Game. You get your producer to just give me the correct name. It's either The Fast Game or The Speed Game. Brilliant book. And very short. And it talks about his time coaching the Oregon women and Loyola Marymount and the Lakers and everything. What a story it is. And so that's what Mark Few's got going up there with all these different players. And they just they start the game on time. You know, one of my challenges.
Yeah.
As a
Bill,
fan,
the book's called The Speed Game, and you got that right. Anna's got a question for you. She has solicited listener feedback on this. Anna, go ahead. You have the floor.
I did, but I'm going with my own question. You mentioned your lovely wife, Lori, who, correct me if I'm wrong, but you've been married for almost 30 years.
31 years now. Not,
31
not long
years.
Enough. Not long enough. But I had to wait until she was born before I married.
That's right. So is ESPN correct in reporting that you guys met at a party that was organized by the Grateful Dead? Is that true? I got to know.
No, we met in church.
You met in church?
Same thing.
And Anna, one thing you have to learn or know about me is that John knows this from our lifetime of working together and friendship and everything, and you just got to jump in. You can't wait.
I mean,
don't hold back. Just jump in anytime. Cut me off. It's all fine. One of the great things about basketball, and it's very much like the Grateful Dead, is it's very much like riding your bike. You're on the go. And you're going to get the job done. And so you, anytime you have a thought, anytime you have a question, just jump in and say, hey, I got something to say.
Okay, so what would surprise us most about what you've learned in 31 years of marriage to Lori?
How she's always right. That's what surprised me the most. It's like John Wooden. In that, you know, he was right, and I just didn't know it, and I was going my own way, and I just I wish I had known then what I know now, but I didn't, and so here's a situation where I never thought as I was going through my adult life that, because I've spent half my adult life in the hospital, I never thought that I would be free of pain, and I never thought that I'd be happy in love. And I'm both of those. Now, being free of pain, that's a relative state of affairs. And I'm doing pretty darn well right now. And so I can do a ton of things. But what I really can do is that I can be comfortable and confident in that I love my wife. And she's, you know, Roger Waters wrote the song about Lori, the most beautiful girl in the world. And so here she is, and it's like, I can remember when I was laying on that ground and I couldn't move with my spine, and she would, I could see her coming across the room, and as she would get 4 or 5 feet away, coming over to me to try to help me get through the moment. And I would say, please, please, you're getting too close. You're pushing the air onto me. Yeah. And there were some pretty low moments. And, you know, when you are the spouse, when you're the partner of someone who has just a seemingly endless and constant chronic health issues, and how difficult that is on the relationship. And because of the uncertainty and the fact that you can never plan anything, and the way that health challenges just break you down and crush your spirit and take away the hope and the joy and the love of life that I try to have on a constant basis. And I sure have it today. I woke up this morning and the sun was coming in with the golden shafts of light, and then UCLA in the Final Four, and we're on our way, and it's going to be great. And the women's Final Four with Arizona and Stanford in it, and with the great showing of the Conference of Champions all the way through. Not so much just in the winning of the games, but in the way they played. And that the way that the Oregon State and USC and Oregon and UCLA, and Colorado was going too. I mean, yeah. Colorado played their best game, and then I don't know. You know, they had that tragic. They had that. I don't even know what the word is when they had these mass shootings or shootings of any kind. I just don't get that at all. And it's horrific. And that happened like right during the game. It might have happened even before the game started. So I have yet to see when the players actually found out about that. But when you have, you know, players don't live in a vacuum. They don't, you know, artists, performers, it's not a vacuum. I remember studying Van Cliburn when, you know, because this guy was as famous as anybody ever was, and in the 50s and the 60s, and he finally just had to stop when they were just pushing him so much, so hard, so fast, so far, always wanting more, and he said, "Hey, man, I'm not a machine," and players are not machines, and the emotional aspects of what's going on in the world is, well, one of the things that I love so much about the Conference of Champions is that our conference represents the best of the response to what's happening in the world right now. And that's why I'm proud to be a member of the Conference of Champions, and also to have such a fantastic historical relationship with the state of Oregon. I got to get up there, man. I'm sure the weather is just getting perfect up there right about now.
It's Bill Walton weather. It's bike riding, taking your bike down the bridge, riding into downtown weather for Bill Walton today.
Let's go. I'm ready.
Hey, we had Dave Pasch on the show recently, and he talked about kind of teaming up with you, your buddy. And
who are you talking about?
Dave on your broadcast.
Bill Walton. The guy that leads the cult. The cult leader. Oh, my gosh, the conspiracy theorist.
Yeah.
The placeholder, Cole. I'm a renewable energy guy, man. And I try to base my life on facts and science and knowledge, not on these conspiracy theories. Oh, my gosh. So that guy. Okay. Yeah.
He was on. You've had other partners over the year. I think Steve Snapper Jones and you may have been like your start in broadcasting, as I remember. Or how did you get your start in broadcasting?
Let's talk about Snapper. I mean, there are few people in the world who have saved me, my life, and my career more often than Snapper Jones. Because Snapper, who didn't make the cut from the Blazers when they made the transition, when the Blazers made the transition from Lenny and Tom Mascheri after my second year to Jack Ramsey. Snapper was on the team, and he didn't make the cut. He didn't make the transition, and that's what started him in broadcasting. Yeah, but as a player, as a teammate in the years before that, Snapper was just invaluable because I was going to just quit. It wasn't happening at all for me, and I had so many problems. And but Snapper was always there as a great supportive friend, and he'd always say, okay, come on, Bill. Let's get in the car and drive over to Kenita and get in the hot water and soak it out and we'll figure this out and try to move this forward here. And he did that numerous times as a player and then countless times as a broadcaster, because I live on the edge. I'm always out there, and you know, I always want to go as far as I possibly can. And I grew up in a culture with the greatest parents ever who had zero interest in sports. But my parents were so encouraging, so nurturing, so positive, and so omnipresent in my life in terms of establishing the culture of curiosity, exploration, and experimentation that I've always tried to live. Now, once I got going, it was like with John Wooden. Once I got going, they just let me go. Because when you were a player for John Wooden, you know, when you were the star player, when you were the top guy, it was like, he was never telling you to slow down. He was never telling you don't do that as a player. Now off the court, he was always telling me to don't do that. But I think one of the great advantages that John Wooden had over a lot of other coaches was that he was a great player himself. Maybe the first great player. I wasn't around in the 20s and the 30s of the 20th century. And so here was a guy who understood the mindset of the guy who was going to be the best, or the guy who was going to be the greatest. And, you know, he had Walt Hazard, he had Kareem, he had Sidney Wicks, he had Dave Myers and Marcus Johnson, he had Jamal Wilkes and Greg Lee. And so here it was that I was just going for everything I could. And I see that right now as I try to figure out the question that you asked with Snapper Jones and how I got started in broadcasting. Because I never, never gave broadcasting a thought. I had no idea. I never gave broadcasting a single thought, much less a second thought. It wasn't until I was already out of the NBA for, I'm going to say, 4 seasons, and I spent the vast majority of that time in the hospital, probably having, I'm going to say, 15 to 18 surgeries in that 4-year period on my feet and ankles to try to get me going again. And then finally I couldn't play at all. I couldn't walk at all anymore, so they had to fuse my ankle. That was March 15th, 1990, not that I remember the date, but here was a situation where I had nothing. You know, I had been out of work. I had been out of everything and lost everything and my dignity, my self-respect. And I just, couldn't do anything. Couldn't walk, couldn't move. And I had this stump of a leg down there. And then one day, I was sitting there and lying in the hospital and I'm saying, what am I going to do now? And then it dawned on me, a lightning bolt flash of inspiration. Seared across the smoking crater that's my mind. And I said to myself, you know what? I got it. I'm 6'11". I got red hair. I got a big nose. I got freckles. I got a goofy, nerdy looking face. And I can't talk. I'm going to be a television broadcaster. And the rest is history. And that was 31 years ago. And here I am again. Although this weekend I'm working on Westwood One Radio with Jim Gray. We just finished that incredible interview with Kareem. And oh man, he was fired up today. And it was just so fun. Yeah. Sorry, John. Sorry.
No, I was just going to reset and say you're listening to Bill Walton and the smoking crater that is his mind. You have kept I remember we brought you on at the beginning of the pandemic and you gave us like an inspirational speech that went like 20 minutes and I was so grateful for it. And you gave us a book list and a movie list. You're such a creative. How much of that was your parents not being sports people? Because it seems to have opened your mind to music and art and entertainment.
It was not only my parents, greatest parents ever. My dad passed 17 years ago. and my mom is still alive. My mom is 94, and she lives in the same house that we all grew up in. They moved there when I was born, 68 years ago. And so, and she lives just 10 minutes away, and Lori and I try to get over there every day just to check in on her, make sure she's doing okay. And she's just all fired up, and she's got her knitting and her books and her iPad and her phone, and she's got her PBS television, and she's got her classical music, and she's surrounded by her garden and her plants, and she is just a very happy and optimistic person. But besides having great parents, I had coaches and teachers and heroes and role models who were so incredibly important. It wasn't until, you know, I rarely encountered anybody that didn't have my best interest at heart until I joined the NBA. And that was such an eye-opening experience. And that was when I realized what a mistake I had made with John Wooden, because I thought that everybody had John Wooden in their lives. I've since learned that there are people like John Wooden everywhere. Very few of them ever get to the position of being, say, the basketball coach at UCLA that has all these legendary teams and players coming up through the ranks. But you know, you go down to the local fire station, you go down to the local high school, you go to the community college, you go to the city council of these different of our different communities ever. I mean, these are people who were just so dedicated to making the world a better place, and that was what John Wooden was all about, and that's what my parents were all about. And I just finished this terrific book. It's full of so much information. It's called The Wizard and the Prophet, written by Charles Mann with two N's, M-A-N-N. I'm Bill with two L's. And so here's a guy that just wrote this phenomenal book about the history of the environmental and ecological movement and what has changed the world so much. And well, one of the guys, Norman Borlaug, he won the Nobel Prize because he was able to figure Nobel Peace Prize because he was able to figure out the scientific advancements which allowed mass food production. Because, you know, John, I don't know how old you are, but like my parents and Lori's parents, you know, they grew up during the Depression and World War II and famine and just absolute awful lives. My life has just been absolutely blessed. But here's a situation where this guy was able to figure out how to produce enough food to feed the people on the earth. And he was the only agronomist, I think, who's ever won the Nobel Peace Prize. And then the other guy, Bill Vogt, V-O-G-T, like Jans Vogt, the great bicycle racer. This guy, his whole deal was that, you know, we're using too much. You know, we have too many people, and we got to start taking care of the planet, or we're all going to die. And so, and this book, over 500 pages, traced this remarkable journey of these two people who didn't like each other because they were going in different directions on the same issue. Norman Borlaug, he thought that innovation and science and technology could overcome all of our problems. And Bill Vogt, on the other side, he just said, no. We have to be better. We have to be smarter. We have to use less and conserve more. And so as that ongoing struggle continues and how we're going to move forward and with the ever-increasing population that we have and the limited resources, and boy, the drought that we're coming back into in Southern California. I'm told that there's no drought in Western Oregon right now.
There hugely is not. Bill, I have two last questions for you. Tony on Twitter.
All the questions you want.
Tony on Twitter wants to know what your favorite Dead song is.
The next one I hear.
The next one you hear, of course.
Okay.
And you talked a lot about your health challenges. What do you credit the most for being, as you say, relatively pain-free today?
Well, there's a lot that goes into it. It starts with having great doctors. And the guys who, you know, my doctors at UC San Diego Health, you know, their knee replacements, you know, my ankle fusions are very old. And that's kind of the end of the line with what you can do for your feet and ankles. And my one ankle fusion was 31 years ago, and the other was 20 years ago. And so science and technology and medicine, and it's all advanced so far. The fact that they were able to fix my spine, if my spine, which is now 12 years and 3 months since my spine surgery, not that I remember the date of February 8, 2009, but this fact that I am even able to still be alive is just an absolute medical miracle. And the discipline, the sacrifice, the honor that all these healthcare professionals have for all of us to try to keep us going out there. I work on my health, Anna, all the time. You know, I cannot take my health for granted. I have to exercise. I have to keep moving. And so I start every day in the water, in the pool, in the jacuzzi, and then from there I go into the weight room. We're lucky to have a nice gym here at the house. And then I try to ride my bike as much as possible. And then there's always the element of luck. You know, health is always the result of your diet, your nutrition, your lifestyle, and then the luck involved. And I'm just the luckiest guy in the world that I'm still going, and I'm feeling fantastic. And what was your question again? I forget.
You got it. But you're going to be on the Westwood One broadcast. People, you're listening to Bill Walton. We got just a couple more minutes, Bill. And, you know, yeah. I know that UCLA is near and dear to your heart. What would it mean for UCLA to get to the final?
We're so happy and proud. I mean, this is like, when you're part of something special, and I've had that in my life. I mean, from my childhood, from my coaches, teachers, heroes, role models, from high school and UCLA and the Blazers and the Celtics and the Grateful Dead and fact that we have 6 children and 14 grandchildren, and it's just, you know, I'm the luckiest guy in the world. And to see other people succeed, to see the way the Bruins have come back, it was great to hear Kareem talk about it, because, you know, he just has the master control of the language, and he says, look, it's not like this is, you know, these guys are writing their Hall of Fame speeches right now. But these guys, they have bought in to what Mick Cronin. And I go back to January 15, 2020. That's about 14 months ago, before the pandemic. And UCLA, I mean, they were just coming out of the darkness and with the new coaching change. And we got a new athletic director who's now got a deal with Nike and Brand Jordan. And so everything's going fantastic for UCLA. And we're so excited. And on that date, January 15, 2020, at Pauley Pavilion, Stanford with Jared Haas and Oscar Da Silva comes in, and they just run the Bruins out of their own building, man. It was just like, oh, what is up with this? And the team basically quit. And Mick Cronin just called them all out. He said, you guys don't even deserve to get practice jerseys. You don't deserve to wear this jersey here. Look at those banners. Look at those retired numbers. Come on, you guys call yourself UCLA Bruins. And he basically challenged them to quit. He put it right out there, and they could have quit, and a lot of guys would have quit, but they stayed. They stayed, and they said, Coach, show us the way to the promised land. And now Mick Cronin has got these guys believing. And so even though the Daily Wager is down on them, even though that Doug and Joe and Tyler and Stanford Steve and Jordan and everybody's going the other way, they went the other way the whole time, right? And they won all these different games, and it was just absolutely fantastic. I forget who they played, because what happens when you become great is that the other team becomes irrelevant cannon fodder. And right now, that's the story of Gonzaga, of making the other teams look like irrelevant cannon fodder. The challenge for UCLA is to be ready to go, and don't wait. Don't spend the first 2 or 3 minutes of that game getting dressed and getting warmed up. Because I tell you, between Timmy and Suggs and Ayayi and Kespers and Nembhard and Anton Watson, those guys are going to be ready. And one of the great lessons of life that you learn from a master teacher like a Jack Ramsey or a Maurice Lucas or a John Wooden or a Red Auerbach is that you learn to make them play your game. Because if you're going to play Gonzaga's game. You're not going to win. But the ability of UCLA to make the other team look bad and make them miss the free throws, make them not be able to rebound, make them not be able to make offensive creativity plays, make them not be able to back cut, make them not to be able to get into their comfort zone. Yep. And it was just so special. And it's going to be incredible. And I'm going to be sitting there. We had a reunion last night, a UCLA basketball Zoom reunion. Kareem led it, Tyus Edney, Lucius Allen, Mike Warren, Marcus Johnson, Andre McCarter, Andy Hill, Jamal Wilkes. It was fantastic. And we were just laughing and joking and talking trash.
Bill Walton.
We're ready to go.
Bill Walton, you're the best. We know we love you, man.
We got ready to go. I hope you still like sports, Anna.
Bill, hey, I appreciate you giving us your time. We wish you the best. Our listeners are in love with your voice. Keep doing what you do.
I'm the luckiest guy in the world. I get to go from John Canzano and his wife Anna to the Daily Wager that starts at the top of the hour.
Right.
Here we go. And then the women's game starts, and it's Arizona and UConn, Adia Barnes and Geno, South Carolina with Dan Staley and Stanford with Tara. Let's go. Oh, man.
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald
Face. Sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Face Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Face Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.